Some people call him the Doctor. Some people call him Mr. Yarg Metal. We call him Brad Dahl. He is on episode 391 of Signals from Mars. Have you missed him? Well, he's back. This is a new Ask the Host episode where Brad takes me on one-on-one with some questions here.
I'm ready.
Let's do it!
Brad is one of these people that jumped over from the old Mark Striegel Patreon page. And when things kind of shifted there and I started my own thing here, Brad quickly jumped over because he kind of got it. He understood where I was trying to go. There were a few people that joined in early on. And then there he was part of that next wave only a few months later. He runs Yarg Metal, which is an online music station, and he's always looking for new music. So I think that was the instant connection. But outside of that, I've gotten to meet Brad and his wife, Shelley, in person. They're great people. We talk as much as we possibly can, sometimes not as much as I'd like, but I like to say life gets in the way and we're on opposite sides of the world. So it is kind of difficult to do that. I don't know if I will have a chance to see Brad while I'm in the States. When this episode comes out, let's see. This is scheduled to drop on August 9th. I'm trying to figure out where I'll be in my schedule. I'm recording this, just so you guys know, July 22nd. I'm doing all the host wraps and editing for the balance of July and all of August, which is six episodes total. I'm recording one episode this week with Jeremy Weltman, which will be our recap of the first half of the year. We're going to be talking about a bunch of different albums with that. And what else do we have? That's scheduled to be released right after this episode, actually. And then the last episode in August will be What If John Bush. And it's a cool concept between Ed Ferguson and myself where we discuss what if John Bush had joined Metallica? What if he fronted other metal bands that we all love? So it should be the kickoff of a fun series of shows, I think. I'm throwing it out there for people to also throw their suggestions at me so that Clive Burr had remained in Iron Maiden. That's something for a true music nerd like myself. Folks, Nico and Clive are two completely different drummers. Way different. Different feel, different styles. And yeah, I love both of them. There's something about Clive's playing. It's magical. Nico's is as well. I mean, there are some albums where he plays like Power Slave or Peace of Mind where I listen to those albums today. And they sound fresh as hell and I love them. Anyway, these Ask the Host episodes are fun because I have no idea what these people want to talk to me about. I have no idea what's going to be coming out of my mouth. I can't stop and re-record, and yeah, I could technically edit, but why? I think the discussions are fun, and I hope you enjoy this episode. It was a lot of fun. It's always fun to talk with Brad and his wealth of information and different things that he's done in his life. One of these days, man, we're going to have to do a Dr. Poison Chronicles, where he talks about some of the craziest stuff he's heard at Poison Control. Anyway, let's get on with the episode. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Signals from Mars. I am your guest host tonight. Because taking over the hosting duties is Brad. This will be another Ask the Host episode where Brad will be asking me questions. And I'm sure there are plenty of interesting topics that we will be talking about today. Brad, how are you, sir?
Doing great. I'm feeling extreme pressure right now. Oh, boy. I'm going to make this, of course, it's going to be fantastic. Are you kidding? We're going to have fun.
Absolutely. Let me just give you this for some inspiration.
Okay.
Oh yeah.
Oh, I love it. You know, the worst for me, the Rob Halford thing was, I think it's at the end of Desert Plains, where he just goes to this weird screaming thing. And it's just awful. It's like, come on, Rob, what are you doing?
Oh, yeah!
Okay, I'm down with that. Oh, yeah! I'm still, you know, I was sick about 3-4 weeks ago when I went to L.A. I got sick and lost my voice. And I figured, oh, about 3 days or so, I'll be good. Like, it took me weeks, and I'm still not 100%. I'm probably about 95 right now, but it's really been lousy, man. So it's good to be kind of back.
Hopefully you get back to normal shortly.
Well, yeah, as I've always said, it's hard to get back to normal when you've never been there.
Yeah, well, it's close to Abby.
All right, let's get this show on the road here. Most of my questions are music related. Some of them aren't. Okay. So we're gonna try to mix it up. I think probably the most natural place to start, and I think all of us who love music like you and I do, have something in their life that happened that brought music to them and made it important.
Yeah.
What was that for you? What happened in your life where you started, when you realized that, wow, I really like music?
4 years old. 4 years old, yep. My brother had Kiss Alive 2 and Kiss Destroyer. And I looked at the booklet for The Evolution of Kiss that came with Alive 2. And it was the page dedicated to Ace Frehley, where it's the big picture, where it's the light shining down on him. And he looks out of this world. It looked like a mix between a Saturday morning cartoon and music, basically. And I said to myself, I'm like, I love this. This looks ridiculous. What is it? And without knowing what the lyrics were about or anything, you know, I'm singing some lyrics that probably 4-year-old shouldn't be singing, about calling Dr. Love and Christine 16 and stuff like that. But that was the catalyst, my brother and those two Kiss albums. And I mean, we were lucky in the sense that shortly thereafter, he got Cheap Trick Budokan and Pink Floyd The Wall and Scream Dream from Ted Nugent. And what else did we have on vinyl? I don't know if I mentioned Back in Black. We got Led Zeppelin 4 as well. Later on, we got one of the Pat Benatar albums. And he started getting into new waves. So we had Haircut 100, I remember. And mixed in with a bunch of Kiss-related things.
Nice.
And that was it for me. It was all those albums on the old turntable where you could stack them all. And one by one, it would play one side of it at a time. They would come down and then we'd flip them all over and then listen to them the other side. Yep.
Set the arm up on top there and it would just knock them down.
That's it.
And if you wanted to play the same record over and over, you just lifted the arm up.
Yeah.
And it would just automatically play the same record over and over. So, yeah, turntables. Pretty awesome. You know, it's interesting because I think for those older than me, I'm 63 right now for another couple of weeks. For you know, people in the music that are older than me, it's all about the, you know, the Beatles that got them into it. You know, it's like, oh, and I saw the Beatles on Ed Sullivan. You know, that's when the light went off, and I was like, I want to do that. Mm-hmm. Everybody younger than me, it's Kiss, and almost all the musicians I've interviewed definitely all the ones that I've asked them, you know, what was their inspiration, you know, what got them into music. 100% Kiss. And, you know, yeah, I don't think Kiss gets enough credit for what they've done for music overall, because a lot of people who are in music now wouldn't be there if it wasn't for them.
Right.
Or might not be there, I should say. So, cool. That is a great story. Okay, so that's when you started enjoying music, getting into it, and it's burrowed its way into your soul. Mm-hmm. And you'll never turn your back on music, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Because I've known people as I've gotten older that when they were younger were into really, you know, hard rock and stuff like that. And then they tell me, you know, as they got older, it's like, I feel like I can't listen to that music anymore because I'm older and I shouldn't be listening to that. And I was like, what the hell's wrong with you? How seriously?
That's nonsense.
Yeah. It's like, you ever going to stop not liking Captain Crunch? Come on.
Right. Well, that's I could understand that maybe. Okay. So I've talked about this a little bit. For example, I really liked at one point Sammy Hagar era Van Halen. I can't listen to it anymore. Very little. I can listen to some 5150 and a song here or there from the other albums, but it just doesn't do it for me. But doesn't mean that I don't listen to David Lee Roth era stuff. I think just shunning a style of music is just ridiculous. Can you outgrow a band? Sure. If you're like, oh, yes. You know, the lyrics just don't speak to me anymore. But out of the millions of metal bands or hard rock bands that are out there, there's not one that speaks to you. But yet you can listen to country or hip hop or whatever else now. That doesn't make sense to you. I'm not saying that you can't listen to any of that other stuff, but it's just dumb to completely just say, oh, well, I'm no longer a hard rock or metal fan.
Yeah. I used to like that stuff. And now, and it's like, well, you don't like it anymore? No, I just feel like I shouldn't listen. It's just weird. Yeah, I totally get, you know, there's some bands that, you kind of get away from. Mm-hmm. You know, it kind of just doesn't speak to you anymore. I 100% get that. Okay, so now you're a music lover. The next step is becoming a musician. When did that happen to you? How did that happen to you? What instrument spoke to you at first, or what made you want to play an instrument?
Okay, so again, Kiss. It was pretending to play the guitar. And in 1983 is when in third grade, when we could start to do concert band in elementary school. And I asked, can I play the guitar? No, we don't teach guitar. Okay. Do you teach bass? I've seen marching bands with bass players. Nope. What other rock based instrument can I learn and apply it to actually use it in a rock environment? Well, you can play percussion. You can play drums. All right, there we go. So that's when I started. I started taking guitar lessons as well. But my problem is, especially back then, what is now called ADHD, where sure, I could learn notes here and there, but how is this going to get me to play Creatures of the Night or Detroit Rock City when I'm playing, you know, Kumbaya and I'm playing stuff that I don't care about playing? You know, so it wasn't fun. So I wouldn't practice, and guitar lessons lasted about a year. And later on, you know, with the advent of the internet tab and stuff like that, you know, I picked up another guitar. I have several now, and I don't play as much as I should. How about that?
I agree with, I feel the same way. I need to play more as well. So that's going to start happening real soon. Okay. So drums were the first thing that you played. And yeah. So this was in, was this in an orchestra, a marching band or both? Or
it was orchestra. I didn't touch marching band until ninth grade.
Okay. So what exactly type of percussion did they have you doing in the orchestra? Cause there's a lot of things you can do there.
Yeah. Snare, bass drum, cool. Cymbals I had to play back then as well. Triangle. Well, it wasn't so much that. That was later on. Yeah,
Doing mallets and mallets, stuff.
Yeah, with mallets and doing the crescendoing cymbals. And maybe you'd sneak in a crash at the end.
Nice.
Maybe you'd play accent notes too loud, and I can't hear the flute because you're hitting an accent note on the snare. Oh, okay. Sorry about that. And then it was funny because in high school, where there it's marching band and it's orchestra. You do a mix of like old compositions and new stuff like Broadway show tunes or stuff. And one time we did, we did a piece which was themes from TV shows.
Cool.
And one of the cool things there was I got to kind of quote unquote solo because I had to do the intro to Hogan's Heroes, which was, you know, just the snare part. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And then there was another part where they're like, well, you know, here, just play whatever you want. I will always remember this because the first Badlands album had come out. And one of the things that I was playing all the time was the Eric Singer's beginning to the song Hard Driver.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
So for those two bars where I got to play anything, I just did the intro to Hard Driver. And I remember the first time that I did it in marching band or in orchestra, one of the girls that was the drum majors for marching band put her clarinet down, stood up, looked at me and just started clapping.
Nice.
And she absolutely lost her shit. And she said, oh, my God, I didn't know you could play like that. I said, yeah, I can play much more than that. That's what was suitable to this. You know, it's what I've been playing a lot. And it was funny because other people saw other sides of what I could do. And it was fun. It was fun for me to integrate rock based things into marching band and rock and orchestra band. And when we did the school play as well. And I wasn't allowed to play the drum set there because, oh, you know, we need more of a jazz feel. It needs to be jazz. It can't be rock. It needs to be jazz. So they would bring in, you know, a gentleman who was older, who was a teacher at another high school, and he would play it. And I would do some of the percussive parts. I remember one year we did Peter Pan, and I got to do the clock inside of the crocodile. And it was with, I forget, the clavinet, I think it was called. I forget the actual name of the instrument, but I got to do that. And he was always, oh, you know, the jazz is the only real form of music. I'm like, fuck with this jazz bullshit. You know, I've been hearing this crap since I was a kid from instructors and, you know, and I would always say, you know, well, it's funny because jazz players can't really play rock music. Oh, they can play anything. Like, no, they can't. I said, and I told the guy, I said, look, there are a few instances. Got your Bill Wards. You've got your Neil Peart. I go, but I bet you can't play like John Bonham, for example. I bet you can't play like Ringo Starr. I bet you can't play like, Nico McBrain or stuff like that. Oh, I don't know who half of those players are. Like, oh, but you know Dave Weckl, and you know, oh, well, Buddy Rich is the greatest ever, and it's this and that. And I said, cool, Buddy Rich was good for his era. Not saying he wasn't a monster, he wasn't a great, he wasn't a pioneer, but people have come after, done his shit, and added their own stuff to it. So that's just my way of looking at it. Anyway, continue, sir.
Okay. All right. Along these lines, your personal first drum kit. What was it? How did you get it? How old were you?
It is a Pearl Export. It was in 1988. It cost $700-something with cymbals included. I got a Zildjian hi-hat and a thin crash. I said, I don't need a ride. I hate the sound of the ride cymbal. I just want the hi-hat. That's good enough. I said, I don't remember Peter Criss ever playing the hi-hat. He was, the ride. Right. He was always playing the hi-hat. And, you know, as you get older, look, he's playing ride there, whatnot. Okay. So I got it. And I kept telling my parents, I want a drum set. I want a drum set. I want a drum set. And they said, okay, but you're not going to Spain this year. Okay. Drum set will last me forever. Spain is only going to be 2-3 months. Seriously, you're going to give up an opportunity to see your friends in Spain for the drum set? Yes. This is what I want to do. This is what I want to do with my life. I want to be a musician.
Yeah.
I ended up doing that. I ended up getting the drum set instead of coming to Spain for one summer.
Cool. Do you still have that kit?
It's under the stairs at my parents' house.
All right.
And in theory, I gave that drum set to my nephew because he wanted to start to play and because it would cost me more or less the same to have it shipped over as it would to buy something new. But since that drum set hasn't moved, either I'm going to make it move somehow this summer. It's either coming back with me or they're taking it to their house, one or the other.
So how many toms did this kit have?
Two rack toms and one floor tom. One
floor tom. So probably what? 13, 12, 13 and,
16.
16. Yeah. Cool. That's the, old school, drum kit. Now it's all smaller amount of toms.
Yeah.
Swells, whatever. Yeah. All right. Well, you know, here's the amazing thing, though, is that your parents, having a drum set and being able to play it in a house, not always the easiest.
They hated it.
Oh, I bet they did, because it's really hard to muffle it. It's really hard to keep the noise level down, of course, unless you're playing jazz.
Yeah.
You're tickling those drums.
Or you're pretending to be Ginger Baker.
Oh, there you go.
You know, or one of these things where me and my brother would watch Closet Classics on MTV, and we would get a kick because it was always some 60s band, Iron Butterfly or whatever. And you'd see the drummer, he would be just like tapping like that with his index finger.
A lot, you know, a lot of that though back then, because they were lip syncing to the thing,
right?
Or maybe the singer's mic was live, but everybody else is supposed to be, you know, it was recorded. So the drummers, I mean, you'll see it. They'll put like tape all over and stuff all over the cymbals, so it won't be making noise. And the guys will do that. They won't actually hit the cymbals, and it's kind of funny to watch these guys pretend to be drumming without hitting the instruments. So maybe that's what was going on. Some of what was going on. All right, what color was that kit?
Oh, it's black.
You lost your voice there.
It was black.
I can barely hear you. Let me see if it's my set here. No?
Hello?
There we go. Is this thing on?
Yeah.
There we go.
All right.
It was black.
The drum set is black.
Okay. Good color. Always looks good. But you never go wrong with black. Ever. Oh. Any instrument. Even the flute. I was going to tell you, when the guy said that you couldn't hear the flute, it's like, well, maybe the flute player needs to be louder.
Yeah.
That's what I always say. The bass is never too loud. It's everybody else's maybe too quiet. I'm like, don't tell me to turn down. Okay. Now, I can't really see what's going on with your hair over there. Did you cut your hair?
My hair is down to here right now.
That's a lot shorter than when I met you.
Probably. And plus, I went out cycling with my kids today, so it curls up. Back.
Okay, so when was the last time you had really short hair? Like,
short hair was
over the ears.
That would be around the year 2000.
Okay, was that job related or? Or are you just retired of dealing with your longer hair?
No, that was.
Or was that before you grew it out?
That was before I grew it out. My ex-wife's family. Well, first, my parents wouldn't let me grow it out. Second, my ex-wife's family would always say, oh, you're a hippie. What are you talking about, a hippie? I'm a rock and roller. I'm no freaking hippie. I'm into, devil horns and stuff like that. I'm not into, hippie culture, none of that. Oh, no. Back in my years, hippies only grew their hair out. Yeah, okay. That's cool. Move along. I got divorced and I started growing my hair out.
Nice.
And my parents stopped hassling me about my hair because at that point I told them, I said, look, I don't give a shit what you guys are saying. I'm just going to grow it out anyway. It got as long as I've grown it down to probably all the way down to my ass.
Wow.
For the last 2 years, like when I started losing weight, when I started exercising more, stuff like that, I finally said, look, I love having my long hair, but I haven't a ponytail all the time. So kind of what's the point?
Exactly.
What I decided was the cutoff point for me from now on is I will always, when I go to the barber here, I'll grow it like an inch past my hair or past my ears. I'll have them cut it to there. And then once it gets to a length where I need to put it up in a ponytail is when I need to cut it. So, and that's before right. I was conscious with, people are going to think that I'm a sellout, that I'm not that much of. And I said, fuck it. I'm the one that has to live like this. And, there's so many other things that I'm sure that they would bitch about. I mean, we've talked about this at length. I wear hearing aids now. And the good thing about even having this length of hair, you can't notice them.
Yeah. I like being able to go to concerts and have my earplugs in and not have them be sticking out. And not big deal. But that's funny. So you told your parents, don't bug me about my hair, and they didn't. Your mom didn't?
No. My mother, no. My father, yes. And I have uncles that continuously would badger me about it. And I know one of my uncles caught me on a really bad day once where he just showed up out of the blue and just started hammering in about my hair. And I said, look, you're really pissing me off right now. If that's what your idea was, if you were looking to piss me off, you did your job. But I don't need you messing with me like this today. And he started saying all this, oh, you know, you always take things the wrong way, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, well, then just don't bring up my hair being too long all the time. It's annoying. I don't pester you about other stuff constantly where I could, but I don't.
Yeah, I've never understood it. It's like my whole life, my mom was on me constantly, you know, get your hair cut. And so I was never really able to grow it very long.
This is the way that I look at it. And this is what I've always said when people have brought it up. Because I know even with what I wear, I remember wearing this shirt for the first time about 2 months ago. It's a recreation of a Metallica shirt for it's the Sad But True single. I've always liked this image. Jason Newsted used to wear it all the time, and they, because of whatever anniversary of the Black Album, they've decided to re-release these. So I picked one up. I remember taking it to basketball once and just seeing everyone kind of look at me like, what are those? Those are skulls. That's this, that's that. And I'm like, listen, regardless what I wear, regardless what I look like, my brain, my heart, you know, who I am doesn't change. So I can wear a button-down shirt. I can wear a tie. And I'm still the same person. When we went out for something recently. It may have been my wife's birthday. And I bought a new button-down shirt and a new pair of jeans because of all the weight that I've lost. I said, well, I want to look good.
Yeah.
And I wore it to go pick my son up from basketball practice. And the team that was practicing and the coach all stopped and just looked at me like, what the hell's going on? And the coach says to me, goes, why are you all dressed up? I go, what? I can't dress like this. I go, see, you guys think that I'm just that, but I'm whatever I want to be.
Exactly. Yeah. I just don't know why people care. And, you know, I've just always gotten crap about my hair. And, it's like, why do you care?
Jealousy sucks.
Yeah. I kind of fell into this pattern where I get my hair cut just twice a year. I mean, it's expensive, you know?
Yeah. Well, you want to know how much it costs here?
Yeah, I do.
$11.
Wow. Is that sponsored by the government? The government sponsored haircuts like healthcare?
No government sponsored haircuts.
Okay.
That, you have to join the military for that.
All right. Well, I, you know, when I first started working at the Poison Center, I was still actively playing with a band. And that's basically when Shelley would give me permission to grow my hair as long as I wanted to. Which is kind of funny. It's like, why do you care? But the first time I cut it, I went into work and everybody was just freaking out. Like, what's going on? And my boss said, why'd you cut your hair? And I said, oh, I have a job interview. Yeah, she never bothered me about my hair after that. All right. Cool stuff. Yeah, it's like, can you imagine if you told your wife how to wear her hair? I guess there are guys that do that.
Yeah.
But I know if I said something to Shelley, like, you know what? I want you to do this with your hair. I want you to, you know, whatever. I think I'd get punched. Pretty sure.
Yeah.
In a loving way.
Actually, with my first wife, she always had bangs. I hated bangs.
Oh, they're the ridiculous. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was funny because she grew her hair out. And then after we got divorced, one of the first things she said to me, look, I got my bangs back. I'm like, all right, not my problem anymore.
Yeah, I won't ask any questions about your ex-wife. I know you probably don't have problems talking about her, but it just seems like, why bring that up? Okay. Now, I know, shift gears here. I know you're coming to the U.S. here pretty quick.
Yes.
What are you most looking forward to seeing or experiencing in the U.S.? It's been a long time since you've been over here.
My biggest thing is sharing experiences with my kids. Going to Cedar Point with them, going to concerts with them, showing them where I grew up, showing them that no cities exist in where we live, or the quote unquote city is a big town.
Yeah.
So stuff like that, taking them to a real shopping center so they know what a mall actually is. Whereas, you know, a big shopping center here, maybe one store in the States is the size of an entire shopping center here. So it was funny because somebody asked me yesterday, we celebrated my oldest son's birthday. And he says, "You got all this stuff at Costco, right?" I said, "Yeah." I go, "You're the only one that's in on the secret." Cause I mean, it's not, there's only five Costcos here. And this kid's actually been to one because his father works in Bilbao. So there's one right outside of Bilbao. And I told him, I said, "Just so you know, the Costco, even the Costcos in the States are bigger than the ones in Spain." So yeah, it's going to be interesting seeing their faces when they see the enormity of everything over there.
Yeah, no kidding. Things are huge here. You know where the world's largest Costco is? At least a couple of years ago, it was the world's largest. I don't know if it's still is. Salt Lake City, Utah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's huge. It's stupid huge. And it's awesome.
But that makes sense, though, because you're in a place where, I mean, all the years that you've lived in Utah, how much of the population is outside of Salt Lake?
A very small percentage. Yeah. I mean, that.
So if you're trekking into that, you're probably doing it once a month.
Yeah. Okay. I see where you're going with this.
So with the enormity, it's your one-stop shop and you load up and then you know, you don't need to come back for a while. Somebody asked me recently, "I hear their gas is good." I go, "Their gas is the best gas you're going to buy." I go, and they do it on purpose. They give you the best gas. They give you the best prices because they know that once you're there, well, since I'm here, I might as well go in and pick something up. So whatever you didn't spend on the gas, you're spending inside the store. And chances are it's going to cost a lot more than if you paid, you know, full price for the gas.
True. Very true. Well, I'm excited to hear what your kids think about the U.S. after being here for a month.
Yeah.
And Cedar Point, I've only been there once, and it really is incredible. It's truly fantastic. The roller coasters there.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
My wife and I have been there 4 times, I believe. I've been there before we started dating. And now with my kids. Yeah. So
before you started dating,
what's that?
Before you started dating, how did you get her to?
No. Well, I was dating someone else at the time. So before, I'm just saying my wife has been there that many times.
Oh, she, not with you.
Yeah.
Okay. I've
been there one time without her is what I'm trying to say.
All right. I was going to say that'd be kind of interesting. You meet this girl. It's like, yeah, this is not a date or anything, but hey, you want to go to the U.S. or go to
Coast?
Not a date though.
Yeah. Well, we're prepping her to go on a lot of stuff that she's never gone on before. So we'll see where that goes. Yeah.
Well, hopefully you guys didn't run into the same thing that happened to me as I got older, to where those rides started making me kind of sick, you know.
Well,
motion sickness thing. So hopefully that's not an issue.
Let's hope.
Yeah. I love roller coasters, but I have trouble riding them. I haven't been on one in a while. So Cedar Point, I'd love to go. Mm. All right. Let's talk about Spain for a second.
Okay.
I mentioned this question to you last time we chatted. What are the five most popular swear words in Spain?
Oh, my goodness.
Will this get us kicked off of YouTube? No, because you'll say it in Spain. Well, I don't know. Could be.
Well, if they consider this educational. Who
knows? It is educational, kids. This is for the kids.
I would say for me personally, I mean, it would be mierda, which is shit.
Mierda. Okay.
Joder, which is fuck.
Joder?
Yeah.
Not chinga. I learned from Mexicans. So.
Yeah. So that's, I mean, they'll understand it and we'll understand chinga, but that's more of the act. That's more of the verb tense. Ooh. So,
okay.
So let's see. That's two.
I wonder if that's how they get the chingazos for fighting, like saying, I'm going to F you up, you know? Maybe that's, I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah.
Chingazos. Yeah. Okay.
Let's see. Another one would be, I would say gilipollas is another one. That's like dickhead, I guess. There's no direct translation, but it's at the level of, you know, equivalent to.
It's like in Mexican, pendejo. There's no real direct translation.
Right.
Other than like saying asshole, but.
Yeah.
That's not what it translates to.
And then the fifth one, I mean, there's a lot of different things like lambeculos, which is ass liquor. There's. you can call somebody uno.
Can I point out that it is Pride Month? I mean, that may not be a bad thing.
You could call someone an ojete, which is calling them a butthole. Ojete, yeah.
Okay, I'm in on that.
I mean, there are others, but they're probably like milder in comparison. And of course, I mean, I've been told by a lot of people that I swear a lot, and a lot of the swears kind of come out on the fly. So I will always remember this one time that I was driving with my mother, and I called someone I called them a dick licker. I said, look at this dick licker without his turn signal on, something like that. And my mother in the passenger seat. Yeah. Oh, that's nice. That's very nice. Oh, dick licker. Oh, that's nice. So that's one of the memorable ones.
That's great.
All types of combinations of swears and acts of different things especially when driving. So.
Oh yeah. Yeah. You got to have stuff for when you're driving. You know, the funny thing to me is, like, I think butthole's one of the best ones because it's, I mean, it makes me, I don't know, it just makes me laugh because it's not like a really, if you're calling somebody a butthole, it's not like you're really digging into them. You know what I mean?
Well, so that kind of leads me into what I was explaining to my kids the other day. So kind of the swear words or the insults that we would have as kids, we didn't necessarily have to say bad words. You know, we would say stuff like, shut your mouth, crustacean, or stuff like that. And it would get people to think, crustacean, what did he just say to me? it could be something where you're calling someone, again, a shellfish, and they have no idea, and they think that it's actually worse than what it is.
That's fantastic. Okay, good stuff. See, this is an educational channel here.
There you go.
We should get a sponsor. All right. We'll go back to music. We got time here. Three bands you've never seen but would like to.
Okay, my son asked me this recently.
Ah, so you're all ready for this.
Kind of. Kind of I am.
I'm going to say it can't be a band that doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, okay.
It has to be like something, you know, like a bucket list thing. It's like,
Okay. So
I've never seen them. I want to see them.
Yeah. So the first one for me would, I mean, without a doubt, is U2, because I've never seen them and they've always been one of my favorites.
Wow. Okay, good. I've never seen them live either, and I really like them. So
yeah, here's the thing. Most of the bands that I've really wanted to see, like we recently saw Depeche Mode, that would have been a bucket list one. So I never have seen Black Sabbath or Ozzy.
Oh wow. Yeah.
So that would be one.
Yeah, that may not happen. So
that may not happen.
Yeah.
Or we talked about recently how there have been rumblings that they want to do one last show with the original four. We'll see.
Yeah, I heard an interview with both Tony Iommi separate and then Geezer posing the same thing. And Geezer is just like, he didn't think Bill could do it, which I thought was interesting. But he was all in. He'd do it. Tony was a little bit more on the fence about doing it. So, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see if that happens. If it does, I probably won't be there.
Yeah, they would probably have to. I mean, the easiest thing to do is have Vinny Appice play most of it. Have Bill come on for certain songs. You know, why not?
Vinny. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Okay, so U2, Black Sabbath. One more.
Right. Life of Agony. Never seen them live, and I really enjoy them.
Wow. Are they still going?
Yep.
Cool. All right. Well, I'm going to challenge you to try to make that happen somehow.
Almost. I had tickets, and then they canceled the dates.
Oh, way to go, guys. Huh. Okay. This is kind of the same question, but different. Three bands that you've seen but would really like to see them again.
Oh, okay. That's easy. Wow.
Okay, good.
Nine Inch Nails.
They're still doing stuff.
Yeah, there's rumblings that they're going to be doing another album and touring.
Cool.
So it would be them. Would be...
Nine Inch Nails.
Metallica.
Metallica, good.
Which, if I wasn't at basketball camp, we would have gone here in Madrid, but impossible. Kiss is done.
Well, let's hope so.
Motley Crue is technically done. I don't want to see them. I've already seen them three times.
Yeah, yeah.
I would love to see Maiden again.
Ooh, yeah.
I've only seen them once.
What tour was that?
With Queendrick and Halford opening up on Brave New World.
Yep, Brave New. Wow, that would have been a great time to see them because the set list was fantastic, and it was all getting Bruce and Adrian back in there. It was just like a huge shot of adrenaline in the band.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's a magical time to see them.
Yeah.
So you saw a good one.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's see. So Nine Inch Nails, Iron Maiden.
And Metallica.
And Metallica. There you go.
Yeah, there you go. There's your three. All right. Okay. Who's your favorite patron?
All of them. All of them. I love you guys.
There you go. There you go. Well, I wouldn't have been offended if you had said Metal Dan for secret reasons.
Yeah. Well,
right now he's my favorite patron. I yeah. What a guy. Okay. All right. And yeah, along those lines, your favorite Kansas album. Oh yeah, the first one. Yeah,
it established them as the greatest rock and roll band, American rock and roll band of the 70s.
Just ever, really. Ever. I mean, the greatest American rock band. For sure. Yeah.
And for those that don't No, that's extremely sarcastic.
Oh, extraordinarily. Yeah, because somebody on a podcast that you were a guest on, and that was one of the questions, and the guy said Kansas, and like with a straight face. And I'm like thinking, what? Wait. I mean, they might be your favorite band, and I'm totally cool with that. But there's no way in hell they're the greatest American rock band.
Yeah, I was waiting. Kansas, I wasn't waiting for. I was waiting to hear Aerosmith. I was waiting to hear Van Halen.
Good answer there. Oh, actually, both of those are good answers. Aerosmith, Van Halen.
And somebody said Boston as well. And I get it because of their first two albums, but their other albums go largely under the radar.
Yeah.
You know, how many people are cranking Amanda nowadays? You know?
Yeah, that sounds kind of naughty.
And the thing with Aerosmith is you've got all the schlocky ballads that they've released, you know? I know that there are people that love everything Permanent Vacation afterwards, but there's a lot there that I can't really stomach. Van Halen, I mentioned before, love the Roth years. Hagar years are, you know, okay.
Where do you stand on A Different Kind of Truth?
Love it.
Cool. Good. Yeah, I don't understand people who are just like, yeah, I'm not going to listen to it just because, you know, wow. All right. So, yeah. So, but anyway, my challenge is find me somebody who's got that album cover tattooed on their ass or their back or any kind of Kansas tattoo that's not about the state. It's about
or the band. Or the Jayhawks, the University of Kansas, you know.
Yeah. No. Yeah. You can't. Yeah. Just find me one person who's got a Kansas band related tattoo.
Yeah, they've got the lyrics to Carry On My Wayward Son or Dust in the Wind.
Dust in the Wind, maybe. I could see somebody having that tattooed on them.
Yeah.
Some all we are is dust in the wind.
Oh, I thought you were going to say on their taint or their scrotum, but all right.
It probably says something else, and then as it gets engorged, then the whole thing comes out.
Yeah, well, that's after the vasectomy. It says dust in the wind. Anyway.
and I got to say, this is no disrespect to Kansas, because they're a fine musical institution.
Fine bunch of musicians.
Yeah, but they're not.
Fine bunch of fellas.
Not the greatest.
Not the greatest, no.
No, not the greatest at all. All right. Well, that's what I had for you today, Victor. I was going to pull out some lightning round stuff, but I think that'll push.
You've got 10 minutes for lightning round.
Yeah? Yeah. All right. Let's see what I've got back here. You know, one thing I like a lot about Rock Candy magazine, as you know, but one thing they do is the on the inside cover, they always have a question for all the staff.
Okay. And
I love this because I love hearing other people's opinion. So this is their big question. We've probably talked about this. Should Geddy Lee and Alex Lifeson work together again as Rush under another name or not at all? There's your three choices.
They should work, and I've always said this, they own the name. They should do whatever they want with the name. They were the guys that were there when they had no followers. They were the guys that drove around in the vans, froze their nuts off at night on tour. It is up to them. For anyone that ever says, they should just give it up. I remember when Stone Temple Pilots, when Scott Whelan died, they should just give it up. And I said, look, they're the perfect example of a band that when they switched their names, nobody cared. They were talk show. They switched the vocalist. Nobody cared. They did Army of Anyone with Richard Patrick from Filter on lead vocals and Ray Lazier, who's now in Korn on drums. Nobody cared. And that album was fantastic. Nobody cared. When Jerry Cantrell put out some excellent solo albums and nobody cared, he went back to using the brand name Alice in Chains and started getting shine back on the name and on his work. I think if Geddy and Alex want to do it under the name Rush, it is up to them. If they want to go out as 2112, it is up to them. I don't expect any of these people, any band member of a band that went away because somebody died and want to come back because they need the money and people are throwing millions of dollars at them. I don't think they should become painters overnight and say, nah, man, because Bob in West Virginia is going to call me a sellout. So I'm not going to do it.
Here's to me the real issue. Okay. And it's like, any of these bands where the guy died. Okay. I know I know when I haven't been able to do shows or whatever, it's like, you don't want your band to stop playing.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure Neil Peart would be like, you guys should definitely keep playing. It's like, you guys can't ever play as Rush if I'm not going to be in it. I just can't imagine him ever saying that or feeling that. So that makes no sense at all. If that's why it's like, oh, it's disrespectful for them to go out with a different drummer. Like, no, it's not.
So who?
I'm sure that's what the guy would have wanted. Yeah. Is that you guys keep playing. You keep the music alive. Keep the name alive. Keep the, you know. Yeah. Okay. Good job on that one. Okay. We got time for maybe one more. Let's see. All right. So here's the big, oh yeah, this is, these are not real easy questions. This is the issue's big question. Should live album mean live, or are overdubs acceptable on a live album?
Again, the band should do whatever they want. Kiss Alive 2, Kiss Alive, Cheap Trick Live at Budokan. The list can go on and on. All these years later, when you find out that it was really recorded mostly in the studio, did it bug me at first? Yeah, I was like, you know, they're selling me on something live. And then I remember going back and listening to the songs and those renditions and saying, you know what? I don't care. I love the way that these songs sound. So whether it's actually live or not, doesn't matter. The funny thing is you have a band like Metallica that releases everything, warts and all, live. And people, oh, that's got to be them lip syncing. Nah, because I'm hearing James sound, his lyrics are like cracking and the guitar just, you know, went out of tune and a guitar string just broke and Lars didn't play that right and whatnot. They're definitely not playing back to a track. So I don't believe that, but whatever.
Yeah, that's a whole nother question about tracks, but we're not going to touch on that one. So you're okay with touching things up and that? Yeah, I am too, but you know, I don't know. If the album's good, the album's good. Yeah. That's the bottom line. It's
Celebration Day by Led Zeppelin. I saw it in the theaters. I have it on Blu-ray. I got to watch YouTube videos and they sound like utter shit live. They sound terrible. Led Zeppelin, see, and this is a misnomer. Everyone says, oh man, they were so great. Song remains the same, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, that was all recorded in the studio. Sorry. I have bootlegs of Led Zeppelin when they played Nebworth and other stuff. And Robert Plant's voice was never good live. It sucked. I don't care what anybody says about, oh, the magic and Plant and blah, blah, blah. Plant's voice was never good. Page, depending on what day you caught him on, was sloppy or sloppy as hell. It was one or the other. John Paul Jones and John Bonham were the only two that were always kind of in sync. And that's just the fact. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that because I want to buy the concert experience. I don't want to hear something perfect. And I think a lot of bands have forgotten that. A lot of managers have forgotten that. And who cares if Def Leppard sings every single backing vocal to Photograph or to whatever? I'd almost rather hear it without all the piped in vocals, you know? Because
I 100% agree with you. I love it when there's like live versions of songs because we can't do all the stuff we did in the studio. So we're going to do it this way live. And I think that's awesome.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. I can always go listen to the record later if I want to hear it like that. And we'll close with this. It's hard to beat really good live music.
Agreed.
And I'll say this because Nathan and I went and saw Saxon 4 nights in Texas 2 weeks ago now, and it was all live, you know, and it was so cool to have. I'm hope you have this with your kids, to have your son with you and have them be feeling the same thing you're feeling.
Yeah.
And I know after the last show, Nathan's hair is kind of grown out a bit because he hasn't had a haircut in a while. He says, "Dad, I now understand why having long hair and rock is really a cool thing, because if you're going like this, man, you know, and you don't have hair, it's like it's not, it just doesn't feel right."
There you go.
That's what I've always said. It's like I don't know why, but when I'm playing a song and I'm rocking out, if I got the hair smacking me and spinning around,
yeah,
it's nothing here. This is short, but you know, if you got some hair flying around, it just feels right. It's just that's all I got. We're gonna close with that because we got a couple minutes.
But excellent. On that note, I thank you, Brad, for putting all these questions together, and I thank anyone who's watching or listening to this episode. This is all pre-recorded, and we hope you enjoyed it. Either way, it's always fun to talk to Brad, and this was no different. On that note, folks, we leave you guys. And we will see you next time right here on Signals from Mars. See ya.
Thank you for listening to the Signals from Mars podcast. You can subscribe to the show on all your favorite podcast platforms like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon, and more. Go to signalsfrommars.com for more information. This concludes our show.